Locked On The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Jumping into hour two of the program on your Wednesday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in today. And always. Reminder, if you missed anything from the first hour, subscribe to our podcast right now. The hourly podcast is posted just about minutes after the hour is over. Listen whenever is convenient for you. And you can subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, Google, or Amazon. Also, many ways to listen to us, 960 on your AM radio. Stream us at sportsnet.ca/960 or tell your smart speaker at your office or at your house to simply play Sportsnet 960. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon, and we can kick off hour two on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Come on in and enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery also available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. And joining us on the hotline right now is friend of the program, Stampede reporter and Flames reporter for Post Media. He is Danny Austin. DA, how are you, pal?
Good. Sorry, lost you there for a second, but I'm good.
Hey, don't ever lose this again, all right? I'm eating I just finished eating a dill pickle salad. I was thinking about you. I just need a Dr. Pepper to wash it down, eh?
You know what? You make me sick, but that's okay. It's always good to be chatting with you, and that dill pickle salad doesn't sound bad, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, it's quite fantastic. Hey, I was just kind of texting with you earlier today, and certainly it's been the talk the last couple of weeks. I'm sure you and Matty Rose have talked much about it. But it's been a busy, three, four-week stretch here for John Hupnagel and crew, as they, along with every other CFL team, trying to get their ducks in a row ahead of free agency on February 8th. What have you made the last three, 4 weeks here, as it seems like a day passes and a significant signing or two is announced by this club?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you made a list of the top 10 guys the Stamps were looking to get re-signed, they've probably got seven of them committed to putting, pen to paper already. It's been a really, really impressive stretch here from John Hupnagel. And I think the thing with the Stampeders in 2021 is they were young, they were building. They didn't like the term, rebuilding, but in a lot of ways they were. But they liked the group that they had. So, the priority really, really is just getting guys back. And they're doing it. I mean, the Sean McEwen signed today, it might not, sell a bunch of tickets, but he's the best center in the league. You had Mike Rose earlier in the week, Derek Wigan, probably the top Canadian tackle. It's been impressive work, and I think that is really encouraging. And I sort of expect them to keep just kind of knocking them off one by one, but no complaints for Stamps fans so far, that's for sure.
You mentioned Sean McEwen, probably not a guy who, as you say, is going to, sell jerseys or sell tickets, but a very important signing the team made the last time in free agency. Obviously, a UFC Calgary guy is the key to that offensive line as the center. They also signed Derek Dennis last week, and I think you made mention of this on Twitter when they signed Dennis, but the offensive line is going to be curious going into next year. Obviously, to get those two guys signed is huge, but this offensive line is going to be interesting to watch come training camp, isn't it?
Yeah, it really, really is. I mean, they also added an extra year to that of Julian Good-Jones, who that's not a name a lot of sort of listeners will know, but he was the starting right tackle, really, really good in his first season. So, they've got those pieces there, but the question is, I mean, let's be honest, Derek Dennis is not young. He's been out of football for a couple of years now. So I don't know if you can go into the season sort of counting on him being your everyday starting left tackle. So that sort of opens up the question, are they trying to bring you Conbray Williams back? We don't know. But football sometimes, we complicate it. You need a good O-line and you need a good D-line. And right now, I mean, I like the pieces that the Stamps have right now. Hopefully they get back a guy like Ryan Sevier. It was a bit of a surprise for a lot of us. Zach Williams, who is the starting left guard, has actually had a couple NFL looks, it sounds like. So he's a guy who, again, the offensive linemen they kind of slide under the radar a little bit, but they're so important. And, we don't necessarily know. I mean, I think that the Stampeders team is ready to compete for the Grey Cup from week one next season. But the O-line, probably there are good questions, but we really don't know exactly how it's going to look. That's the reality.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's the, you know, you mentioned how young they were last year, and it just was kind of a different year, and this team has never been.
Lost you again.
I think we lost Will there, Danny, but just sort of jump in with him here and sort of pick up the conversation with you. We're chatting with Danny Austin from Post Media here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. It is the big show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon. Just sort of a reset with you here, Danny. And the one thing I wanted to start off talking with you about this afternoon was, as long as I've watched the CFL and sort of paid attention to it, it's really been, with the exception of, you know, maybe big name quarterbacks or the occasional big name defensive player of the year sort of guys, 1 year commitments year to year over time in the CFL. We've seen the Stamps with a couple of 2 year commitments. I believe McEwen's another 2 year that we've seen from them today, correct?
Yeah, and both Rose and Wigan earlier this week. So it's extremely notable because Trey Roberson, you know, we can include in that. So, I mean, what that says to me is sort of what I was referring to earlier with the Stamps. Like, they were young, but they honestly, I mean, look, they could have been in the Grey Cup last year. I mean, it sounds ridiculous saying because they lost the West semifinal, but that's a game they should have won. And they really, really built with this young core. So what it says to me is that they like what they've got. You know, even if these guys aren't the biggest names, they genuinely like who they have. And they see themselves competing for a couple of years with this core. So, yeah, it's really, really notable because you just haven't seen it. You have not seen those two-year contracts being given out very often around the CFL. And to be honest, it's been something that fans bring to me as being a real issue for them because they just don't know who's going to be on the team for year to year. So getting that core, you know, Trey Roberson, Julian Godone, all of these guys, I think – you know, it was both a positive from a marketing perspective and an on-field perspective because it lets you know who they have. It lets you know, you know, what system they've got to put in place to win. So I love it, to be perfectly honest with you. And, like, that's me as someone who cares about the CFL. I think it's great.
What's left for John Hofnagel and company in the next couple of weeks here leading up to free agency? We've talked about some pieces on the O-line, some pieces on the D-line. What sort of position, or are there certain names that jump out to you as sort of you'd like to see, or you think Hofnagel would like to see with pen to paper before free agency?
I mean, the reality is, as much as I'm saying he's done a lot of work so far, and he really has done good work so far, there are so many names. There's still so much to do. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's kind of what you'd expect from this point in the season. But, you know, I start with the running back, Kadeem Carey. You know, if he wasn't the best running back in the league last year, he was number two. That would just be huge. He really took over. He was the most outstanding player nominee for the team, and rightfully so. He's number one. I think, look, Kamar Jordan is a guy who anyone who's, you know, followed football in Calgary for the last couple of years, you know, has a lot of affection for. He's so good. I mean, him and Reggie Bailton together, that's the type of thing that Stamps fans should be excited about. But you've also got a receiver guy like Marquise Ambles, who does a lot of the dirty work. You've got Richard Sandani, an upcoming Canadian receiver. So, you know, those are in terms of the skill positions. But other than Trey Roberson, I mean, they really don't have anyone in their defensive backfield. Their DB group was the most expensive, apparently, in the CFL last year, according to Dave Dickinson, and they don't have any of those guys signed up. Now, they're not as expensive as, you know, your top defensive linemen or offensive linemen. So I do think that, you know, you fit those pieces together as we go. But a guy like Royce Metchie, Canadian safety, was probably the best safety in the league last year before he got hurt. That's got to be a top priority. And then we got to talk linebackers, man. Darnell Finke led the CFL in tackles last year in his first year. And Jameer Thurman, I think, is the most perpetually underrated player in the entire league. Was so good in his partnership with Singleton and is so good in his partnership with Finke. So those two for me, you know, I listed all those other guys and then felt like an idiot for not listing those two first because I think they might be the biggest signings left.
One thing that we talk about, and it's usually a pretty common theme here in Calgary just because as much as they grow talent on the field, Danny, this team also grows talent on the sideline in coaches. And we saw another example of that this year as Corey Mace is off to Toronto to join what's really becoming a pretty Calgary-themed coaching staff out in Toronto. But we haven't really chatted with you since Corey Mace decided to become the new defensive coordinator of the Argonauts. What are the Stampeders losing in Mace, and what are the Argos gaining?
I mean, what the Stampeders are losing is not only a great coach, but to be honest, I think Calgary's losing a great man and a guy who does a ton for the community. There's no one I have higher praise for than Corey Mace. He's such a good guy and, you know, connected with the fans so well. And I think that, to be honest, is going to be huge in Toronto where they do, you know, miss that connection. But beyond that, I mean, honestly, when he signed as DC, I had questions about guys like Mike Rose and Derek Wigan because there's so much loyalty to him and he's so respected and sort of loved as a coach. So, I don't know who they're bringing in as their defensive line coach. I honestly don't even know who the candidates are there. But Corey Mace was a staple here. He'd been in Calgary for a decade. He did. You know, you look at the guys he coached from Charleston Hughes to Kadarius Law to Micah Johnson, and then kind of bringing in this next generation with Mike Rose, with Derek Wigan, with Isaac Adeyemi-Berglund, the rookie who got so much better as last season went through. You know, I don't know how many defensive line coaches there are out there in the world, like Corey Mace. I think he's he was just such an asset for this team. So it is a big loss. There's just no question there. It's a big loss, but you know, Dave Dickinson has connections all over Canadian and American football. And, you know, assuming they can find the salary, I have no question that Dave's going to bring in someone who, you know, whether it's a guy just recently retired or it's, you know, maybe an American guy looking for a new opportunity. You know, the Stamps will be able to figure that out, but that, you know, there's no replacing Corey Mace. Corey Mace is the best of us.
He is Danny Austin of Post Media, all things Calgary Stampeders. They get another piece of business done today, signing offensive lineman Sean McEwen to a new contract. On that note, just as you say, you don't know maybe who the candidates are going to be, but we're seeing a lot of teams around the league announce their coaching staff for next season. Do you expect an announcement in Calgary the next little while here? I know it's been very quiet since Mace has left, and you know, there was some curiosity about, you know, what comes next. But do you expect Dave Dickinson to finalize his staff here pretty soon?
I would hope so. I mean, I'll say that to start. Yeah, it has to happen. But, yeah, I mean, the Stampeders aren't really in a huge rush here. It's really only one coach. And, like, you know, there was a while I thought that Edmonton job, I thought Mark Killam was the right hire, and I'm pretty sure the Stamps would have lost a couple coaches there. So they dodged a bullet a little bit with that one. But, yeah, I would expect in the next, honestly, I'd be shocked if it wasn't the next 10 days, probably the next week. You need to have that coaching staff in place. You know, it doesn't matter if you have a system that you basically play the same every year. You, by the time free agency rolls around, you 100% need to, you know, be able to have your defensive line coach talking to potential defensive linemen. And if there's one area where I do think the Stamps might make a splash at free agency, it is at defensive end. I'm not sure if Sean Lemon is back for next year. And I'm not sure that, you know, I think that was an area where there was a little concern going into last season and there likely is this season. So, yeah, I mean, I'd say next, within the next week, I'd be shocked that they didn't do it. You know, Argos had a lot of guys they needed to hire and they already got it done. So I ultimately do not have Dave Dickinson's ear. He's not slipping me a bunch of inside info, but I'd be shocked if they hadn't already narrowed their candidates down and weren't already kind of, you know, hours, if not days, away from knowing who their staff is.
I know you had this on Twitter earlier today, but you were talking about, you know, anybody who's compiling lists right now, if you don't have Jameer Thurman at the top of your list, you're doing things wrong. what's your read on Thurman's status? And I guess, you know, how big that market likely is for a player like him.
Oh, I mean, look, if Thurman hits free agency, he's going to get huge offers. It's worth noting that during training camp of last year, middle linebacker, I mean, Jameer has been the weak side linebacker, both with Singleton and then with Sankey, but we didn't know who the middle linebacker was. And Thurman's so good that Dickinson plainly told us. He said that he's not worried about linebacker because he can play Thurman in either position and he thinks he'll be as good as anyone in the league. I mean, Jameer is just so perpetually underrated that I genuinely do believe that every single team in the league would at least try and inquire and try to get him signed. But that's also, I thought Mike Rose, Thurman, McEwen, you know, I thought those guys were the big sort of ticket items that the Stampeders needed to do. So there's no way, you know, the Stampeders are going to exhaust, you know, every possible option to make sure that they get Thurman re-signed. And I think he's so happy and comfortable in Calgary and has had so much success here that my impression is that, look, this is where he wants to play.
You mentioned, obviously, Kadeem Carey, but, you know, you're looking at other free agent options in terms of offense. You know, for example, if they don't bring back a KJ or a Markieff Ambles, do you expect this team to make a splash at receiver? And if so, you know, who are a couple of the targets you would have your eye on if you're Calgary?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I honestly think that getting KJ back should be priority number one. I think that, you know, look, we don't know what's going to be happening with the quarterback situation over the next couple of years. Having Derek Dennis back is good, but I think Kamara Jordan is one of those guys who carries the culture forward. Traditionally, John Huffnagel has not traditionally gone into free agency and gone after the top receivers. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that you can look at, you know, the receiving yards leaders and just say, oh, well, maybe Brian Burnham. Trust me, I'm sure the Stamps would love to have Brian Burnham, but, you know, they like to promote internally. I think you have your number one in Reggie Bagleton. I think he's the best receiver in the league on his day. So I don't think that they necessarily need to go look for one of the top guys. I do think it's sort of filling in holes, and that's how John Huffnagel traditionally does business. So, you know, I don't think that, you know, a Kenny Waller or a Brian Burnham is coming to Calgary. I still strongly, like, I would be shocked. I think that we would get an announcement. I think that they would release Kamara Jordan early so that they had an opportunity to sort of say thank you and say goodbye if he was going to walk. So I anticipate that happening. What you're seeing around the league right now is the big names getting re-signed. And that's sort of the direction that I see this going, to be honest. I think that Ambles, I think KJ are back for sure.
Well, and you know the quarterback's pushing for KJ to come back in particular.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I honestly think that part of, like, I think Bo got given a really, really hard time by people and fans around the league last year. I think his struggles were ultimately pretty overstated, particularly in the back half of the year. But I do think that, you know, losing the Eric Rogers, not having Reggie Bagleton there, look, Bo, quarterbacks rely on that chemistry that they have with receivers, and he had it with Kamara Jordan. And, you know, his injury notwithstanding, Kamara Jordan is a guy who's come up big in big, big moments and just knows how to make himself available to Bo. So, that's going to be a top priority for keeping your superstar quarterback happy and ultimately allowing him to thrive on the field.
And before we let you go, just because we had some fun with it on the show yesterday, I know you tweeted about it. Can you believe it's been 8 years since the Vancouver Canucks and Flames brawl?
Man, I can tell you, like, there's nothing that I enjoy more than, like, sitting around with, you know, a reporter I haven't, you know, had a beer with in a while and just talking about that night. Because, you know, I was in the Calgary Sun office laying out the newspaper and I just got a call from Wes Gilbertson being like, it's about to go down. And, you know, maybe it's better that hockey doesn't have line balls like that quite as often. But, you know, I do like that every once in a while the Flames seem to, you know, really get into it. And that remains just one of the funniest nights in Calgary sports history, in my opinion. I don't know what Bob Hartley's doing. I love that Tortorella lost his mind like that. You know, I don't know that I need to celebrate fighting in hockey all that much, but I'll celebrate that night because that was a whole bunch of fun as a fan and as a reporter.
No doubt about it. Danny, thanks for the time, my friend. Certainly has not been quiet in your neck of the woods. And, you know, take care of Matty Rose for us, will you?
Man, Matty Rose doesn't need taking care of, but I'll always take care of him if he asks. So, yeah, I love that guy. He's the best of us. Cheers, guys.
And you know he's going to ask you, so it's okay. Thanks, Danny. Appreciate it.
You bet. Cheers. Bye.
Danny Austin of Post Media. He was our guest on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. We've talked a lot about it, Logo, but I think obviously we're probably, you know, if not this week, next week, going to get an announcement as to what the coaching staff looks like. Before we know it, it is going to be February 6th where teams are, you know, then allowed to talk with other free agents. February 8th is the opening of free agency. And, you know, Calgary's done a really nice job of getting many of their high-profile free agents re-signed. And I think we didn't talk about it with Danny, you know, in too much detail there. But in terms of, you look at Derek Dennis, you look at Sean McEwen, you know, Bagleton, Robert Roberson. These players, not only is it a one-year commitment, but it's a two-year commitment. And I think that has been a priority of John Huffnagel this offseason. And you know, we've talked a lot since we've put this show together about continuity in the CFL and, you know, the teams that bring back the majority of their roster, the ones that have success, and you're not going to do very well with constant turnover. You just heard Danny talk about, you know, that being the case with even Bo and his receivers. So, I think it's pretty noteworthy that there's been a lot of two-year contracts handed out by the Stampeders. And I know there's always situations in football where you can cut a player after one season or he leaves to explore different opportunities. And, you know, all that certainly does come into play. But it feels like that's been a priority, and you can understand why from the Stampeder front office.
Well, it's just because it's so many key guys, Will, and it's guys that clearly John Huffnagel and Dave Dickinson trust. And I hope there's more of this around the, you know, entire CFL, because I think it's better for the product. I think part of the CFL, and I think it's always part of it, is, you know, the massive amount of player turnover and really only being able to associate one or two guys with any single franchise for a period of time can make it hard for maybe casual fans to grasp onto the game when the names are always changing. But, you know, that's more of a marketing thing than anything. This, as far as a football conversation goes, I think just bodes well for the Stampeders, and that they're willing to make those commitments to those players. And you're right, things can change. There's can be injuries, personal situations, 1,000 different things can go that way. But it's nice to see in a league where you and me growing up have only pretty much seen the top quarterbacks get multiple year deals. It's nice to see some other guys in key positions get rewarded for that. And I think in turn, the Stampeders will get rewarded for that back by committing to guys.
He is Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nall, coming at you live today and every day inside the iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio, where they treat every employee like family, an iconic family. Apply to join the team at iconicec.ca/careers. It was a massive win for the Calgary Flames last night. They snap a 4-game losing skid as a result. And hey, don't look now, but Saturday is the next game on the schedule. It's going to be a pretty fun one. We'll talk about that, plus a noteworthy item from down under. You talk about a marathon. It's exactly what happened last night in Australia. All that and more as hour two of the big show continues next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
This is The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Impressive night at the Scotiabank Saddledome for the Calgary Flames on Tuesday as they beat the Florida Panthers by a 5-1 count, snapping their 4-game losing skid in the process, and also handing the Florida Panthers their first regulation loss in 9. You look no further than Johnny Gaudreau, who had 4 points last night. He's on pace now for 101 points this season, which would be better than his career high at 99, and which would mean I would be wrong, Logan. As I said, I didn't think he'd ever get back to that 99-point season he had a couple of years ago. But hat tip to Johnny Gaudreau, who's playing his tail off in a contract year. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. It's hour two of the big show, and we'll kick off this segment by giving you the game in a minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Drive home on a executive-driven Infiniti from just $242 bi-weekly, Calgary's original Infiniti destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane. We'll take you back to last night, a 5-1 win, and this is how it sounded on Calgary Flames Radio.
Live from the Sea of Red, Scotiabank Saddledome, Calgary Flames hockey is on the air. Tonight, Milan Lucic and the 17-10-6 Calgary Flames will battle Sam Bennett and the National Hockey League leading 26-7-5 Florida Panthers. Here's Anderson, a shot, stop, rebound. He scores! Rasmus Anderson slaps the puck into the Panthers' net and rips the monkey off his back. The Flames strike first. They score a power play goal to take a 1-0 lead. Here's Verhaeghe with a shot off the post, rebound, and Marchman can't center, and now Bennett scores. Former Flame Sam Bennett scores in his return to Calgary and gets the Panthers on the scoreboard. They've cut their deficit in half to 2-1. He's on the face-off, Gaudreau shoots and scores! Flames win the offensive zone face-off cleanly. And from the left point, Johnny Gaudreau puts the puck on net. Sean Monahan may have tipped it in. The Flames score their second power play goal of the game and take a 3-1 lead. Up the right wing side. He stops and drops Lindholm in front. Kachuk scores! Incredible hand-eye coordination by Matthew Tkachuk, who knocks the puck out of the air and into the Panthers' net, and the Flames have a 4-1 lead. Tkachuk back to Gaudreau in front. Monahan dangles in and scores! Sean Monahan scores his second goal of the game and gives the Flames a 5-1 lead. Into the final 5 seconds now. Puck comes back to the blue line, gets by Ekblad. Coleman will chase after it, catch up to it. Coleman just lets it roll by. And the sea of red rises here at Scotiabank Saddledome. Jacob Markstrom stopping 28 of 29 Panthers shots. Johnny Gaudreau with 4 points leads the way offensively for the Flames, who defeat the top team in the National Hockey League, the first overall Panthers, by a final score of 5-1.
That's your Game in a Minute, heard every weekday following a Flames game right here on The Big Show. It's brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. With 100 new and 75 used vehicles to choose from, visit Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane. And it's funny, I wasn't reminded of that until I heard that back right there, Logan. But if there was maybe 2 more seconds on that clock, we're probably talking about a 2-goal game for Blake Coleman. But as we, you know, we're in the dying seconds, he decided that it was just not worth it, and he was just going to skate to that loose puck. But the Flames beat the Panthers by a 5-1 score. And, you know, that's not to talk about the fact that Florida had the net empty with 4 goals. Deficit.
Yeah. No, I thought Coleman was going to try something, maybe just because he seems to like
so
sticking it to this Florida
team. Sure
looked
like an early.
Yeah, but he took the high road, and look, good for him. His team had the win. He had a goal again against them, and they'll be happier with their performance than Florida was. So move on to Edmonton on Saturday.
And that might be the final kind of little big stretch between games here for the Flames, as we have not got the official release today, but many expecting it to come today, perhaps tomorrow. But the fact that it's, you know, 3-3 or 3:30, I should say, in the East, and actually as I talk right now, the NHL's revised schedule is in the process of being released. But I can tell you that the Flames are going to have a ton of home games in the month of February. If you've got no plans or you want to go to a Flames game, I can tell you this is what it looks like. February 9th against Vegas, 10th against Toronto, 12th against the Islanders, 15th against Columbus, 16th against Anaheim, 19th against Seattle, 21st against Winnipeg, and then March 7th against the Oilers, April 18th and 19th, back-to-back on the road in Chicago and Nashville. So those are the 10 games the Flames had to make up, and 8 of those 10 being at home, 7 of the 8 home dates coming in the Olympic break that was originally in the schedule from February, early February to late February. So that's a lot of home games in a quick stretch for the Calgary Flames. We've talked a lot about it, Logan, and you could probably get a better idea by looking at it on a calendar, which I'm sure you can do so later on today when the Flames update their website. But hey, that's a busy stretch, and we knew it was going to be a lot of home games, and I guess you're liking that if it's, you know, you want to play a lot of games, but you also want to do it without a lot of travel, and that's a lengthy homestand for the Calgary Flames.
It certainly is. That's as long of one as I can remember. And look, I guess we heard this from the beginning, really, Will, of this whole situation, was that it was going to be a complicated process. But for the Flames, and I believe it was Elliot, I want to say that first started, and then Frank was on it too, that the Flames were in a good spot because the Saddledome didn't have a lot of other dates booked either during that time. So for the Flames, it was just going to look like it does now, which is a huge, you know, homestand during that Olympic break to make up for all the games that they've lost. Now, you know, the questions remain by the time that this homestand starts February 9th against the Golden Knights. Will we see full capacity? Will we see food or drink sales at those games? It's going to be interesting going forward as we monitor that in this province. But yeah, look, for the Flames, this is pretty much what you were expecting. And now you're going to have to make some hay at home and get that home record to the place where you want it to be, because you're going to be at home for as long a stretch as I can remember. And look, you've got some big opponents, some divisional games, some tough ones in there. But finally, we know what February is going to look like around here.
Yeah, they're going from having four games to now having 11 games in the month of February. Of course, you got the All-Star break in there as well. So they won't play between February 2nd and February 9th. But the Calgary Flames going to be busy at the Dome in February. And again, the information will be posted on Sportsnet960's Twitter. You can also get it on the Flames Twitter. And if you want to look at it in calendar form, I am sure the Calgary Flames web crew is hard at work to get that for you. But a busy, busy February. And I can say this, if anybody has had tickets to a game that was postponed, again, you'll probably get confirmation from the Calgary Flames. And a lot of this does depend on what certain COVID restrictions are. Because we don't know how long the half capacity limits will be in existence. But if you had a ticket to a game that was postponed, that ticket will still be good on the revised date. So, for example, if you were going to attend the Mark Giordano homecoming on December 23rd at the Dome, that ticket will now be good for February 19th at the Dome against Seattle. So, again, expect, you know, final confirmation from the Flames, but I can tell you that that is the likely path here, and fingers crossed that the half capacity limits will be over by February, and you won't have to worry about if you're, you know, in the cut line for being able to go to the game or what the case may be. But I can tell you that if you've had a ticket to the game that was has already been postponed for the revised date, that ticket will still be good. And that includes the game against the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Islanders, who, by the way, only come once. So if you had tickets to those two Eastern Conference opponent dates, you will still be good to go. February 10th against Toronto and February 12th against the Islanders. And the information is out there for you on Twitter. So we were waiting for it. We finally have the revised NHL schedule. The Calgary Flames sending out the release moments ago. It is going to be a jam-packed month of February with seven home dates between the dates of February 9th and February 21st. Anything else in terms of that game last night, Logan? We really broke it down with Lubardius to kick off the show at noon today. But, you know, a 5-1 victory against the league's hottest team coming in. The power play obviously sticks out. Jacob Markstrom was strong. It was a great night for Sean Monahan. You look at the two goals, and that's what jumps off the page when you look at the box score. But if you watch the game and you watched him away from the puck, it was one of his better games of the season. And, you know, it was certainly one of those nights where everything kind of went their way, and they actually had a lot of the puck luck for the first time in a while. And it's been one of those situations where, you know, as much as the Flames maybe haven't played their best hockey, they also have been getting all the bounces. And I felt like they got all of them last night, and certainly had the goaltender that played better than the guy at the other end in Markstrom opposing Spencer Knight.
Yeah, I mean, we broke it down with Lou in the first hour there, and I thought that we hit on a lot of the main points. And I think, if anything, it seemed like one of those games where, well, they earned their bounces, if that makes sense. Did everything go right for Florida? Was it a perfect game from Spencer Knight? No, but at the same time, I thought the Flames were full credit for creating those opportunities and for doing the right things that lead to those chances. And that's something that was sorely missed from this group coming out of this COVID holiday pause. And it's something that they're going to need to get back to. I really hope that this was the message that Daryl Sutter and company were able to get through to this team was, you know, look at the result that you can get when you play the right way. That's the best team in the NHL right now, one of the hottest teams in the league coming in, that's had your number, you know, going back a couple weeks when you saw them in Florida, and you were able to produce a really good result against a really good team. And I'm not sitting here saying that that makes the Flames Stanley Cup contenders or that they're, you know, a better team than the Florida Panthers, but What I am saying is that a game like last night, Will, proves to me, and I think proves to everybody else, that, you know, when this team is right, they can compete and they can be a good team in this league, and they can go out and have really good nights offensively. But it's going to take the work. It's going to take those little details to get back to that. And when you can do it against Florida, one of the hottest teams that was scoring at a crazy rate that they were, you can do it on any given night. Now it's about doing it against the Ottawas or against the, you know, the other teams that maybe don't have that built-in emotion for you, right? It was easy to get up for last night. Florida just beat you a week ago or whatever in their barn 6-2. Sam Bennett was coming back. They had every reason to fold. You know, you had every reason to get emotional about last night's game. How do they bring that to those other games that don't have that built-in emotion? I think is going to be the key for the group going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, Daryl Sutter's made, certainly went out of the way to make sure that he, you know, puts it out there that his team needs to find the emotion. And, you know, as I say, I think this is now your final kind of big stretch between games. You'll play Saturday against Edmonton, and then into next week, it's kind of back to normal, and certainly the normal case outside of the All-Star break in February, as we announced the revised dates, which are on Sportsnet 960 Twitter if you missed it, as the Flames have new dates for all 10 postponed games. But yeah, I think as you, it'll be, I think in my opinion, Logan, and again, nothing's a given for sure. You've got to work for it, but you know, it'll be easier to have that emotion when you're back to a somewhat normal schedule. At least I think so.
Oh, 100%. Like, I mean, even think about this situation here, the one that they're in right now. Do you think they want to wait until Saturday to play this game against Edmonton? Probably not. Wouldn't you rather get in there Friday or Thursday and not have to sit on this win for, you know, a couple of days and lose the momentum from that? I think that's what's hurt them so much during a lot of this stretch, is that there was no, you know, 3 days after the Ottawa game. Well, it's kind of hard for you to be like, man, why aren't you guys pissed off about that game still? Okay, well, yeah, it was 3 days ago. We've had three practices and, you know, video sessions mixed in. It's hard to maintain that sort of emotional buy-in when there's such a stretch in between. And I think you're right. Having a more normal schedule going forward, I think will certainly help in that aspect. It can't hurt at all.
No, it can't. And by the way, 7 back-to-backs in that revised schedule. So, yeah, to say it's going to be busy is, you know, is an understatement. It's going to be a very busy stretch for the Flames. And I think that the good thing going for them is the fact that you've only got the one game remaining in the Eastern time zone. There is the back-to-backs in the Central time zone at the very end of the season with rescheduled games against Chicago and Nashville. But yeah, you've got the one game left in the Eastern time zone, and that comes later on this month against the Columbus Blue Jackets. So, you know, Calgary's going to play in Edmonton Saturday, Monday at home to St. Louis, Wednesday in Columbus, Thursday in St. Louis, and the following Saturday against the Vancouver Canucks, and then they get into a very busy February. So the games have been made up, and, you know, there's a 7-game homestand is not bad for anybody. And, you know, for all the talk it's been about, you know, Calgary played their, you know, their 13th home game last night, which was the least in the NHL. Yeah, now you're going to make all that up in the month of February. I think it's good that it's all coming in one stretch and there's no travel involved, and we'll see how the Flames respond. And looking forward to Saturday's game, Logan. I think we're going to have a lot of time to break it down, obviously, the next 2 days on this show. But, you know, Edmonton's going to play against Florida tomorrow night. We'll see if they have any success. And they're going to get, obviously, a ticked-off Florida team who was beat 5-1 here last night. But, you know, 7 o'clock on Thursday night in Edmonton as the Oilers host the Panthers. And then the Oilers at home to Calgary on Saturday. The first time those two teams have met since opening night. And I'm very curious to see what happens on Saturday, because it's two teams that are somewhat similar. Obviously, Calgary has not had as dramatic a drop in the standings as Edmonton has, but it should be fun to see what these two teams have in store for us on Saturday.
And our first battle of Alberta since opening night for the Flames on October 16th, and how different you know, how many ups and downs have both sides gone on here over the last couple of months. The roller coaster comes at pretty interesting time, you're right, for Saturday to think about how both teams are heading into this. The Oilers in the midst of their worst season slump right now, and having everybody question what's going on with Dave Tippett and the future of Connor McDavid, and Leon Draisaitl's all pissy up in Edmonton, the back and forth. Now this Flames team is hopefully, you know, turning things around from a disappointing losing streak of their own. Both teams have a ton to play for on Saturday, Will. And you want to talk about emotion, Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, in Edmonton, I don't care if it's 50% capacity or not, that one's got built-in emotion, and I'm excited for Saturday because it comes at such a key point for both of these teams.
Text came in, 960-960. Full marks for the D last night, mopping up the bad rebounds from Markstrom. I saw a lot of rebounds out of the glove and into the slot. If it weren't for 4 or 44, the score was going to be a lot closer. I didn't think the rebounds were that bad, but I will say that I thought the defensive core played a much better game. And, you know, Darryl kind of laughed post-game when he says, you know, you guys grab what I say is the truth and you make it sound like it's a big thing, but you should be asking the defense how they're playing, not, you know, don't ask for my opinion on what I think from the defense. But it's been no secret. It's been a tough stretch for Gudbranson and Zadorov, even a really tough stretch for Anderson and Hanifin at times here. But I thought overall, and this goes into the team defense again, is they, yes, allowed 29 shots, but we're not talking about a massive number when it comes to high danger. The Flames didn't spend, you know, 5-6 minutes in distress. And didn't, you know, have a situation where they were just desperately trying to get a line change in because they were so overwhelmed inside their own zone. I thought overall, led by the blue line, and of course the forwards did help, as we talked about the backline line with Lou, but I thought overall that the team defense way better than what we've seen the last, you know, month, even going back before the COVID pause.
Well, it was a mark. It was the mark of the game for me was the defense turning it around. And you know, Gudbranson wasn't shy to say that him and Nikita Zadorov needed to be better. That I thought was an understatement. That was worked on clearly during practice. Darryl had even mentioned he needed more out of those pairings. As a whole, when this, you know, D-Corps, with all due respect to them, they don't have that superstar guy, Will, that 30-minute-a-night kind of guy. You have to be able to spread those minutes out as evenly as possible. You can't have one pairing just be underwater all night. You can't. Yeah. The pressure on the other two pairings will become unbearable if that's the case. So they need all six guys going on a nightly basis, or pretty damn close to it. And last night was a good example of that. And when they play like that and they can even out those minutes, they're a much more successful group. I thought they did a good job keeping the area in front of Markstrom clean. I really like how Darryl's implemented that since he came in, that area in front of the goal is going to be a tough place for you to get into and play if you're going to play against the Calgary Flames. They got back to some of that last night. And, you know, go back to what Lou said in the first segment with us at noon. You know, Tanev and Gudbranson laying it on the line and getting in front of shots and making a difference for them. That first game against Florida where we saw almost 100 shots combined between the two, you knew if that was going to be the case again, the Flames were probably going to be on the wrong side of it. They got back to their defensive ways and that sort of, I don't want to say smothering defense, I wouldn't go that far, Will, but that limiting defense that certainly makes you count your chances a little bit more if you're Florida.
Yeah, and I think if you're Calgary, you want to pretty much put the exact same game on the table Saturday against Edmonton, and you'll like your chances of coming away with yet another 2 points. So the Flames schedule has been revised, as has it been across the NHL, and we'll start to see some crazy numbers here, Logan, with, you know, teams that have had higher numbers of canceled games. Their schedule is obviously going to be more condensed than others. They might not have the luxury like Calgary in terms of limiting travel and, you know, having played so many road games, then Calgary has the advantage, as even though they're going to be busy, it might not be as taxing as some other groups. We saw this last year with both the Canucks and the Habs, who dealt with COVID pauses. And you know, the Habs played a ton of games. I think it was 24 games in the final 45 days of the season. The Minnesota Wild, Michael Russo, The Athletic, broke down their schedule and their makeup games as, you know, including the ones they've already got on their schedule. The Minnesota Wild have played 5 games in their past 30 days. So like a lot of teams, especially the Flames, you know, and we talked about this with Ottawa when they came in, they played 1 in, you know, 26 days. There's been some teams that have barely played here. But after playing 5 in their last 30, the Minnesota Wild will finish off their season with 40 games in the final 77 days.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot, Will. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not good at math. It's not a strong suit, but that seems like a lot of hockey. Holy crap.
Well, 40 games in 80 days would be every 2 days. So, yeah, 40 games in 77 days.
Holy.
It's a lot of hockey. And Minnesota is going to be very, very busy. And unlike Calgary, they might have a little more travel, but they've also put themselves in a pretty good spot in the standings when you consider how that Central Division might finish off this year. Minnesota, they have got their the second highest points percentage in that division. They've got games in hand on everybody in their division except Winnipeg. So they're in a pretty good spot when it comes to the standings. They've got a really good home record at 12-3-1. And, you know, they're not that far behind. They've only played 16 home games. So Minnesota is not going to have a ton of travel. And they, you know, it does help being kind of in the middle of the continent. But, yeah, 40 games in 77 days is no joke for the Minnesota Wild. And we'll wait and see, you know, as we get to some tallies from across the league. It might be one of the busiest when you talk about what's left for the Minnesota Wild and their 2021-22 season. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. We are live today and every day in the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll shift gears a little bit. We'll talk some hockey, but we'll also focus in on the Tennessee Titans. They got a first-round bye. And did we expect them to have a first-round bye, especially after losing their star running back? And will their star running back be on the field Saturday as the Tennessee Titans open up the divisional playoff weekend against the Cincinnati Bengals? We'll preview that game and talk some Preds next as we go to Nashville, kick off Hour 3, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.